this episode of the Within the Trenches podcast is sponsored by Indiana Nina as well as InDigital Telecom.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 59 of Within the Trenches, and I'm recording live from the Marriott East in Indianapolis, Indiana, for the annual NINA conference. And for this episode, I have with me Julie, who's the Deputy Director with Bartholomew 901 Center, and Claudia, who's a dispatcher with Fayette County Communications. How's it going?
Very good.
Awesome.
Well, good. That's great. That's excellent. We're here, like I said, at this conference. And what have you been in? Like, which classes have you been in, or talks, or, you know, things that have really maybe opened up your eyes or have been interesting?
You go first.
Great. I liked the fire information. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting.
Okay.
Knowing how fire departments respond and how they have to work together with us and stuff.
So were there tapes or anything that you listened to? Because I was going to go in there and sit and listen as well, but I actually had an episode that I was doing during that time, so I didn't get a chance to go in there and listen to the whole thing.
She didn't have any. The ones that the tapes were good were the ones with the heroes.
Oh, okay.
That was really good to see the news broadcasts and to hear what the stories were, and the heroes were sitting in front of me. So that was really neat, especially the one guy. I mean, he actually, you know, had tears.
Yeah.
And so that, I think everybody in the room was crying at that time, but the fire was just more, she was very experienced. Mm-hmm. She knew what she was talking about.
Right.
And as far as that goes,
you know, and it's always good to have, you know, a speaker that's coming in that really knows what they're talking about. And because, mm-hmm. you know, you can relate to it. And because you're, you know, in that situation dispatching, you know, it's good to have somebody come in and tell you. I mean, it was kind of like a teamwork thing, right? How you work together and communications with them.
Yeah. And it was nice that she did compare what we do with them. Mm-hmm. But it's also fun to have the speakers that are funny.
Yes.
Because you don't get tired and want to go to sleep.
Right. But the tapes, you know, it breaks that up as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So that's good. And how about you, Julie? What's something that's really stood out to you this week?
Really what stood out with me was the pre-conference ones. The first one is 911 is the caller, the killer.
Yes.
And I didn't get to sit in all of it, but with me being the NINA secretary, mm-hmm. I got to sit in the first part of it. And as many years as I've been on, it's still opens my eyes on questions that can be asked when you're answering the phone.
Right.
Like, or what you're listening for when someone's calling in and something said, okay, they said that, and it's triggering. Okay, I might need to let an officer know that you need to listen to this 911 tape. But that was the biggest one for me, was the 911 is the caller, the killer.
Yeah, I heard that one was an excellent class.
Yes.
And, you know, just looking at the title for that class, you know, before I came out here, you know, it took me back to a lot of the calls that I had taken. And I was thinking, all those people that I talked to, as far as I knew, they were victims, but they could have very well have been, you know, the suspect. But in the line of work of being in dispatch, we don't always get that closure. So, or, you know, finding out the, you know, the end result. So
true. Especially if you're in a central dispatch, you don't have that contact with the officer, where smaller agencies, you know, they do have the contact with the police officer, so they can come into them, okay, this is what happened, or this is what they told us whenever we got there to the scene. But has a central dispatch, you're just the dispatchers, and you very rarely see the officers, mm-hmm. or especially medic calls.
Right.
You hardly ever hear how those end. You just know, okay, person had a heart attack and the officers had to block intersections on the way to the hospital. And you know it's bad.
Right.
And that's the last you hear.
Yeah. And sometimes that can really suck, especially if it's a bad call and you've been on the phone with them for however long. Because, I mean, we all know, and the general public doesn't, but when you're taking a 911 call, it can feel like a lifetime sometimes. And it's only like 5 minutes.
Yes.
You know? It's like that to them too, though.
Right. Yeah.
I've had somebody call back 3-4 times within a 5-minute period thinking I haven't sent anyone. And they're like, why aren't you doing anything? Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then I have had a couple of times where I've told people, you know, they're not just around the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the places, like, you know, first responders and stuff, it's volunteer.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just sitting in there. True. So, you know, I always told them right off the bat, you know, they're leaving home to get to that station, to get into their vehicle and get to you as fast as they can.
True.
And I remember I caught myself, and there were a few people that I worked with where we started saying, they're going lights and sirens to you. And they'd say, well, what's that? And I'm thinking, well, crap, I guess I really don't know what I'm saying. Like, lights and sirens means like priority one. They're going as fast as they can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I ended up, or we all ended up switching it to that. If we said lights and sirens, we would follow it immediately with, they're going as fast as they can to get to you, or just say, they're going as fast as they can to get to you. Yeah. And they were better about it then. But
I've had some calls where people say, you know, I don't want the lights and sirens on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this is like a possible heart or something like that. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm sorry. This is their protocol. They have to, I can't tell them not to,
right.
to run red lights and sirens. So, and they go, well, when they get close, can you tell them to shut the sirens off? Cause they don't want their neighbors to know.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like, I remember that it was almost like they would get embarrassed by it.
Yes.
You know, I was like, we don't want, you know, drawing a bunch of attention over here to us. I was like, well, do you want help?
Exactly.
Because that shouldn't matter right now. You should be thinking about what is going on.
Right.
But, we would just tell them, you know, caller wants an early shutdown. And they'd be like, okay, you know, and if they did it, they did it. If not, yeah. And actually, I think there was actually somebody who called up while they were going that way. And they were jokingly saying it. They were laughing with me, but they said the same thing. Do they really want help? Because we need to get through the intersections and everything with lights and sirens. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, they're going through some crap right now. It's okay.
But you've never had anybody call back and say, I ask for them not to have their lights on or sirens. I mean, have you?
Oh,
yes.
We have.
Yeah. I've had that too. But the thing is, I tell them, say, I can't control them, and it's their policy
tell them that
to
that's
do that.
Their protocol also, but we've never had anybody call back when they did it. It just was.
Yeah. I've had people call back just crazy upset and like, I can't control what they're doing. Once they get out there, they have their own protocols.
Yeah.
So
yes.
I apologize. If you want to call them, you can. But you made it to the hospital safe, right? And on time? Well, yeah.
Right.
Like, well, all right then. That's all that matters. Yeah. That's the important part. So what I want to get from you is how you started in dispatch first. So whoever wants to go first, Claudia or Julia?
You or Julie, I mean, first, I'm sorry. Since you have probably a lot longer story, maybe even more interesting.
I don't know about that. I do not know about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead. Well, I started in Halloween night of 1987.
Oh.
So I've been doing this quite a few years, and I worked for Shelby County Sheriff's Department, and at that time, that was the oldest Sheriff's Department in the state until they tore it down and built a new one. So, and then in 1997, I got hired on at the Columbus Police Department. And in 2001, we consolidated both the Columbus Police Department, Sheriff's Department, and all the fire departments into a central dispatch. And at that time, I became the supervisor and, anyway, I've moved my way up. Now I'm the deputy director, and I've been doing this quite a long time. So I've seen a lot. I've seen it from when the 911 screen was just a bunch of red numbers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in Shelby County, we had to translate rural routes to the location on the map. We didn't have like the 911 addresses they have now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was rural routes. So that's when I started, and we didn't have CAD. We just had like cards we stamped and wrote on it.
Oh man. Yeah. You're not the first one to say that there was, you know,
it's been a
lot of punch cards and stuff.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I didn't get to use. I mean, we, when our system would go down, you know, we'd jump to paper, and if you missed the time, you have to, you know, kind of round or something.
Yes.
But it would have been nice to have that punch card to put it on there, so we would have the exact times going through. Now, you said you started Halloween night.
Yes.
Do you remember any of those calls that you took? I mean, because Halloween, you know, it's actually kind of, it could go either way. You know, either are really busy on Halloween and you get crazy calls, especially if it's a full moon, or there's nothing going on at all.
Right.
And that's like that for any holiday, really. So
I remember that night I started, I just remember, usually sheriff's department head went to different locations in the county and they passed out candy to the kids. Mm-hmm. Well, on the station, the kids would come in on station, you know, in their little get up and we'd pass out candy. So that basically that night, that's what I remember of starting Halloween night. So other than that, I don't remember any calls,
nope.
But I just remember that's what happened.
What was your training like then?
Basically, I sit with someone one or two nights and handed it over to you. Here you go. Here's the radio. This is how you press a button. This is how you set off the tones for the fire department. And this stamp the card. It was very little.
So you were thrown to the wolves.
Yes. Basically, yes. I remember on, I worked after I got released. Uh-huh. I was on third shift. I was the only dispatcher. One road officer and one jail officer. So basically, it was pretty quiet. I remember sitting and listening to the radio of other agencies around me.
Okay.
And how they would dispatch them. I thought, I like that. I'm going to take that and use that, make me a better dispatcher. So everything I would listen to, I would pick it up and make myself better because there was no one else to listen to or tell me how to do something. So, yeah, it was kind of a lonely beginning.
Oh man, so you listen to a few calls and that's your training, they throw you in. Was it 911 calls immediately, or were they just admin calls, or
all? Because it was a two console station. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have headsets like I do now.
Okay.
Or we do now, and you just pick up the phone and hold it to your ears and, you know, say Bartholomew County, Shelby County. And, you know, do you have an emergency or what's your emergency or whatever? It was very low key.
Okay.
And you just fill out the car because you got the location, what the call is,
right,
and the person's name, phone number. That's about it. So.
And did they tell you right off the bat that, you know, with your training, really all it takes is like common sense and a little thick skin?
You know, I don't think I've ever, I know I've said that to people that I've trained, but I don't think anyone ever said that to me. Because I think when I first got started, I had no relatives in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. It was only the sheriff at that time. I knew his wife, and that's how I got involved. They asked me, so we have a position available, do you want to try? And that was it. So I had none of my family was involved in law enforcement or fire or anything like that.
Oh, man. So you went in just
green. Yes.
Just threw you in. Was it nerve-wracking? Do you remember?
Yes. The nervous part about it was talking on the radio. Honestly, it was. Because
yes.
I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I'm so nervous to talk on the radio. But the thing is, there's only one or two people, really.
That's
going to be hear you. And it's like, you just talk like you're talking to you in person. So I kind of got that. I still get nervous, as you can tell.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. You know, I would always, I was telling the last group in the last episode that whenever something happened that I messed up, if I was keyed up and I was talking and I screwed it up completely, I would continue to stay keyed up. And I would just laugh on the radio because I'd rather call myself out that I noticed it than try to hide it, because the officers are still going to destroy me about it. And they would, you know, they would send messages, be like, ah, stupid. Yes. Like, yeah. Way to go.
I can hear some of them laughing from back part of the police station when I make a mistake. I can hear them laughing back there at me, and then a few seconds later they come up and, ha ha, you said this.
But
I mean, really, you look back, you can only laugh at yourself. It's like, if you don't, you're just going to be a miserable person. But you got to laugh and go with the punches and go with
everything.
First
time I messed up, I think I said, oops, my bad, on the radio. And I had to hear about that. You should say check.
So. Oh, yeah. That is that the same thing everywhere? Is check that. Check that. You know, I was doing it so much that sometimes I would come home and I would say something. And
yes.
I would say, well, check that. And my wife would be like, well, what are you doing? You're not at work.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes if we got into like a little spat about something, I'd never noticed it. But I must have told her enough stories that she would say, don't talk to me like one of your callers. And I would say, is that how I'm talking right now? And she's like, yeah, you're talking to me like I'm like you're talking like in a domestic or something. I'm like, oh, well,
it just comes second nature. You know, if you answer the phone and you start or using 10 codes or signal stuff like that, it's just second nature. And you just feel like it's part of
they
you.
They told me that you would do that at home. And I say to my friend, my best friend, I'll say, well, for your 43. And she's like, what?
Oh man, that's funny. One of the things that we still do at home, you know, it's actually in July, it'll be a year since I've been in dispatch. It'll be a year since I've been with Indigital actually. But even till now, I would say negative. Mm-hmm. All the time.
Yes.
And I'm sure it annoyed the hell out of my wife. But my kids, we got a 10-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. And they would say something and I would say, negative, that's not going to happen. And my son says it. And then the 2.5-year-old, she'll just jump out of nowhere. I'll say something and she'll turn around like, negative. I'm like, oh, Lola, you're doing it too. I'm like, well, I guess out of everything that I could have said at home that I said in dispatch, negative would be the best one.
Yeah. There's some things comes out that you don't want.
Yeah, especially when you put the phone down and make sure that the phone is put down.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. But there's something. Yeah, you can't say everything to the callers. So then, Claudia, how about you? How did you get into dispatching? How did that work out for you?
It's gonna sound corny. It's just something I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Back in 1984, I actually got hired by the Indiana State Police as a dispatcher. We had a post there where I live, and mm-hmm. it's not there anymore. But I got hired, and at the same time, I got a job offer from a restaurant as a manager. Well, it was better pay, better hours, or do dispatching. Not very good pay, all the holidays, nights, weekends.
Right.
Well, I took the restaurant job, and I was in restaurant management for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I was still drawn to the public service, so I am an EMT, worked on an ambulance where I lived in Richmond for several years. And my family brought me back home to Connersville. My grandparents were passing away, and I went back to help my mom with my dad, et cetera. And there again, it was just something I wanted to do. I worked for the hospital. I had to drive 40 minutes away, and I wanted to do something in my hometown. And unlike you, I have family in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. My uncle is the chief of police, and I have a cousin that is a police officer. But I just wanted to do it. I applied a couple times, and I just finally called and I said, look, you need to hire me.
Right. It's going to be the best decision that
you made. I will be good for you. So she did. She hired me, and I have only been a dispatcher for a year.
Okay.
And I still love it.
That's good.
And the police officers come in and say, And somebody actually got upset a couple weeks ago because I had an officer say, well, let Claudia do it. She still likes her job.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's not a good thing to say.
So I was like, oh. But You know, I'm sure they were just joking around, but I do. I still love it. I work third shifts, and it's different. I love it.
I think it makes a big difference if you have passion for what you're doing, especially in dispatch. It shows when you're talking to the officers on the radio, because they know that you're going to take care of them. They know that you're going to know what they want and make sure that they're safe whenever anything goes
bad. I want that more than anything
right there,
but I'm not sure they're, you know, they still know that I'm fairly new, and I did have a good training, unlike you just getting, if I had to do that, oh my goodness.
it was a lot different then compared to what it is now.
But we did have, from what I understand, the group I was in of four or five people, we had an actual training course. She took us, and we had classes. They showed us everything. And we then got to go up after a few weeks and shadow and talk. And so I was glad, thankful for the training. And coming from my restaurant management, that was what I did. I trained. So I expected that. Yes. If I would have just got thrown in, I would have been horrified. But it was. I appreciated all the training. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you get. I do get tongue-tied on the radio because I know people are listening.
But everybody gets tongue-tied one time or another.
I know, and it's funny because even the people that have been there a long time, they still get backwards and tongue-tied. But yeah, it's when I do it, they laugh about it.
It is always it's always a good time, and it also shows, you know, that you're human.
Yes,
you know, you're not. And I think it also helps the people out on the road, whether it be fire, EMS, or police. Not so much trust you more, but know that you're really there for them. Like you were saying, because if you're being human and doing these, you know, these little mess ups here and there, but, you know, laughing it off and just continuing on, you're not, you know, I think it's something that I would trust more as someone being out on the road, because you're not trying to be robotic and you're not trying to, you're not going to dwell on it.
Yeah,
you know?
And you're
if
not.
If you're someone who's going to dwell on it, you're going to mess up.
Yes.
And that's not what they want. So I think it helps to be open like that and be, I'm saying human, like it,
you're not,
I don't know, it sounds
you're not
odd,
serious all the time.
Right.
You know, if you're serious all the time, you're going to go home miserable because you're, like you said, dwelling on things. Mm-hmm. But you have to break things up and laugh at what you do or what things are happening out there. To make yourself relieve the stress. Because if you don't laugh.
Oh, I laugh it off. I laugh a lot at work.
That's good, because, I mean, I always say we have in dispatch this dark humor.
Yes.
Know, that not a lot of people know about and would never understand unless you've done this job.
Yes.
But like I was saying with dwelling, if you don't have this sort of dark humor as it is, you would dwell on it and you might as well quit. Because it's just going to eat at you, and then you're going to start messing up more, and you don't want to get anyone hurt. I mean, we're there to make sure that, you know, people don't get hurt, you know, try to help them the best that we can. So what I'm getting at is that it's good. You know, it's good to throw out those mess ups. I had a this story just came to me now, but I had a coworker. She was on my team, and we were working at night, I believe. And she was talking to this gentleman. His car was broken down on the side of the road, and she'd been getting these odd calls. It was a full moon.
Oh man.
Yeah. It was a full moon, and we were getting all these crazy calls, but she seemed to be the one that was getting the most of the crazy calls. And, she's talking to this guy, and he had a real thick accent, and she couldn't understand him. And finally she just belts out, "Sir, I'm sorry, but I can't understand you. I don't understand Spanish." And he yells back, "I don't understand Spanish either. I'm Indian."
Oh my gosh. And
we're listening to this because she had been sending us messages, and she's like, "You got to hear this. I can't understand him." And we were trying to help her out to, you know, I speak Spanish too. So I don't know why in the beginning it wouldn't have helped, because he doesn't speak Spanish, but, you know, that she didn't give me the call so that I could take it off her hands. But, you know, it got to that part and we're just dying laughing. And, you know, we're on this side and she is just one console over. So I'm sure that guy could probably hear us cracking up. And she just goes, "Oh, my Lord, I am so sorry." And, you know, they were both getting frustrated and it was hilarious. So then after that call, we just kept on and on about it. But a little bit after that, the karma hit me because I was on radios and it was a group of girls who were fighting in the parking lot of this cinema. And when we give out high priority complaints, I don't know how you guys do it, but we've got this warble tone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we key up, hit the warble tone, you know, and then on key of the warble tone and then say what's going on. And so I did the warble and I unkeyed off of that and I'm still keyed up. And I had said, you know, Allegan Central Southeast units, we have a girl fight going on at, and I unkeyed. I was like, did I just say girl fight? I was like, I meant to say there's a group of girls fighting. Why the hell did it come out that way? And then I keyed back. And before I keyed up, one of the officers keys up and he's laughing. And he says, Central, what kind of fight was that? And I said, a group of girls fighting. I said girl fight, but that was my fault. My wrong. Or yours, my bad.
My bad.
Yeah. So that was one for the rest of the night. And I thought, well, there's karma hitting me.
Yes.
Thank you for that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of times, you know, if a dispatcher will put a call in and they're typing exactly, you know, different words in there. And if you read it word for word, you're going, oh gosh, I don't need to be saying this, but you read it and say it anyway. You're going, oh man, I know they're laughing at me for what I just said.
Yes. We actually had, it wasn't on my shift, but, actually, you know what? I think it was, I had gone in and, there was a guy in radios and when he gave out this complaint, he was saying that his wife was giving him bullshit. He said it on the radio. He says, you know, the caller's wife, you know, he says that she's giving him bullshit and he just wants somebody out there. And he unkeys without realizing what he said. And a deputy keys up and he says, what was she giving him now? And he's sitting there, his eyes, you know, popped open and he goes, she's giving him bullshit. BS. It's been a long night, he says to him right on the radio. And we're once again just dying laughing. And I was like, man,
oh my.
Hopefully the FCC is not listening to our radio traffic because that wouldn't be good. But, yeah, it's always stuff like that that it breaks up, you know, the craziness that can be dispatched.
A lot of times if you have a new person and, you know, it's like, there's certain foul language that's written on a car or a vehicle, whatever, mm-hmm. that needs to be said. And they're going, do I say this over the radio? It's like, it's part of the description. You had need to say it over the radio. So yes.
Yeah. It's always good when that happens.
Yes.
I know some of my former coworkers around my team, they would put that if somebody said it, they typed it in. And they would say, you're going to say it over the radio like that, right? I'm like, I don't know, because I still enjoy my job. You know, I love my job. I don't want to lose it, but
there's foul language written on the car.
Yeah, yeah. We would tell them, the rest is in the narrative. Go ahead and check it out.
Yes, yeah.
And they would sometimes say, you know, well, what's in the narrative? I don't have signal right now on my tough book, you know, so I can't look it up.
Inevitably, the officers will come back at you, say, I need you to say, I need you to repeat it.
Right.
Or if it, like a person's name and they'll say, they run a plate number and you try to say the name.
Yes.
And you spell it instead of say it because you don't know how it sounds. And they go 10-9 or repeat yourself.
Right.
And I can't say it. This is how it is, you know, spelling or whatever.
I actually try to say those long words.
Yeah.
The 8-syllable ones. And what's funny is they'll say it at first and then they'll say common spelling.
Spelling.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah. Common spelling.
That will always get you.
I've got 15 letters and one vowel.
There's a deputy and I believe he still does it every now and then, but And he would, it would be a long night. There's nothing going on. We're trying to figure out something to do. And he'd key up on the radio and he would sound like something was going on. And he'd say, I need you to run this play. I got a rolling, 28 that I need you to run. I'm like, okay, well, you know, go to lean. We'll run it there, which is, I think, IDEX type, you know, here.
Yeah, yes.
So, somebody would go and they'd be like, okay, go ahead with a plate with the 28. And he would give the plate and, you know, of course it didn't work with like me or anybody else who's done it before, but it was a plate that they used a lot because the name was F-U-K for the first name and the last name was M-I. And so somebody would go to read it and then they'd unkey and look over at whoever was by them and say, is that what they're trying to make me do? And it's yes, like, yeah. Yep. It's like, it's all good. Go ahead. Yes. You know, say it how you want to say it, but don't say it
the way
they want you to say it. Use a little accent if you need to.
Exactly.
Yeah, those were always fun. So are there any calls that either one of you, whoever wants to go first, that you can think of either early on or recently, anything that might have been that's like stuck with you? It can be funny, scary, anything like that has stuck with you.
I always say that everybody remembers their first death call.
Yes.
And my first death call was, it was out in the county and we still had to translate rural routes to where the location was. And a car had fell on a guy.
Oh, geez.
And we didn't have the regular 911. You just had the phone number.
Right.
So we're trying to get where this is. And when I first started, people would say like at such and such curve or at this hill. And it's like, okay, I'm new. I don't know all these places in the county that has common names. And she tried telling me where it was at. And you're thinking, this car is on this guy and I got to get him help.
Right.
But he passed away. So, I mean, it sticks with you when you find out, you know, could I have done something different?
Right. Yeah.
And I know as the years go by and I see new people have calls like that. And the same thing goes through them. Could I have done something different? Could I have asked a different question or, you know, anything like that. But I remember that call. And to this day, it's emotional.
Right.
Because you think it just sticks with you.
Now, what do you think it is that I've talked to many dispatchers and I'm the same way, just like you were saying, if I could do something different, something better that would have changed the outcome. Why do you think that is that we go into that immediately starting to analyze what we did?
Because our main goal is to help people. Mm-hmm. And we're only helping them from a distance and you instinctively want to be there. And the only way you can be there is through the telephone or whatever. So
another thing I think of too is everybody wants the outcome to be positive.
Right.
And when it's not positive, you go into that questioning, you know, what did I do wrong or what could I have done different? Because if it's positive, you're not asking that question. And anytime it is bad, you do ask that every time.
Yeah, I had a call. It was about the last week or so of my dispatch career. And I told my team, I said, you know what? I have a feeling I'm going to get hit with a bunch of crazy calls because I'm already going to be out of it. You know, I was switching to the industry partners, the private sector part of 911. And I had taken this call. It was a suicidal call where this girl called saying that this guy had run into the house and he was very upset and everything. And he was just yelling at everybody and arguing. And I had first put it in as, now I'm trying to think of what, the term of it is. But you know, just a disturbance that, you know, somebody there causing a disturbance. And, so I had it as that at first and she's going through this whole thing, but she didn't tell me immediately that the guy was suicidal. And it was towards the end when she said he was suicidal. I'm like, okay.
That's important information I need to know.
Yeah. And so I started asking her, you know, what kind of vehicle is he in? You know, what was he wearing? You know, all the main stuff that I needed to when he took off, what direction did he go? And I asked for his phone number to see if I could try to call him. And she gave me the phone number and she said, you know, he left, you know, so-and-so minutes ago. And I thought, okay, you know, this is, I'm going to see if I can get a hold of him. So I get off the line with her and I go to call him and the phone rang once. And as the phone rang that one time, there was a call coming into 911 already. And we were really busy. I mean, it was shift change. It was about a little bit after five. So it was just booming, you know, it was just going and going and going. And so there was nobody else who could get the phone call. So I hung up, I pick up the other line. And what the girl had told me was that he left in a blue Metro. So when I pick up the other line, there's a gentleman on the line saying there's a car that just crashed. And I said, well, okay, well, where are you at? And he gave me the location. And I just, like, right now I'm getting goosebumps thinking mm-hmm. talking about it. But I looked at the map, and I was, as he was telling me, I was mapping it out. And I thought, oh, man. I said, what kind of car is it? And as he was telling me the car, what it looked like and what it was, I was like, I was lipping it myself. And he said, it's a blue Metro. And I said, is the person okay that's in the vehicle? And he says, there's no way that this person has survived. He said that the car is into, like, crushed into a tree. And I put him on hold to get everybody going. And I remember standing up and I said, I think this is my suicidal person. And they said, are you serious? And I said, yeah, you need to give this out, you know, tell him right now, you know, tone yes. if you have to, because they were already screaming that way for this, you know, person that was causing this disturbance. And, because they were all close to that area anyway. So they were all going there. And then, you know, we toned it out that this crash came in. And sure enough, it was him.
Wow.
He was that dead set on that, you know, he was going to commit suicide that happened. But now, whenever I see a blue Metro,
you think of that.
I think about that.
Yep.
Because when I was done with that call and they were out there already doing their thing, I listened to the call again. And I started analyzing. I mean, I went deep into it. I mapped out how far he went and how, you know, the distance, how long it took. You know, maybe if I wouldn't have asked this question and just went with this one instead, would I have been able to get on the phone with him on time to maybe stop that?
Yeah.
So that call really stuck with me.
See, my thinking would have been that when you tried to call him, I would have thought, oh my gosh, me calling him, did that cause him to...
Right.
Wreck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have, you know, felt one of
the,
guilty.
Somebody had said the same thing too. Yeah. Like, didn't you think of that? I'm like, no, because that one ring, a call was already coming in. So his car would have already crashed,
yes.
you know, before mm-hmm. my call. So the car would have had to been already completely crashed and the phone was just there, you know, ringing. So I that did hit my mind at first. And I thought, no, there's no way because of the timing. And
right.
when I had first called that one ring and they were already calling in and it had already been ringing, calling into 911 mm-hmm. for like three or four rings. So they probably got the recording that says you've called, you know, Allegan County, somebody will yes. be right with you. But yeah, that, you know, that has stuck with me. But what about you, Claudia?
Well, when I first started, I had a call from a woman, and I think they told me I had to get tough skin, like you said.
Mm-hmm, right.
She talked and talked and talked, and I was still unsure. Do you need an officer? Do you need an ambulance? What's the problem? And I couldn't hang up from her. It was like she just was distraught over whatever it was. And finally I said, okay, well, do you need an ambulance? Do you need an officer? Why are you calling 911? And ended up that I did send an officer. But by the time I hung up, my partner who was experienced says, oh no, you can't be doing that. You're going to have to not be so nice to right. everyone and get the business taken care of. Mm-hmm. And it took me a minute and I was like, what do you mean not be so nice? But I realized now that she was tying up a 911 line.
Right. Yeah,
but that was one. And then I don't know. I did have over this last winter, we had a rough winter and a lot of the county roads were closed and had an elderly woman call in and she said she just couldn't wake her husband up and tried to ask her if she wanted to start CPR and no, honey, I'll just wait. And that was nerve-wracking for me because all the signs led to what actually was, and being the roads were bad, it took them a long time to get there.
Oh,
I stayed on the phone with her the whole time. and how are you doing? You know, trying to console mm-hmm. her. And I, is he breathing? Well, I'm not sure, you know. And she was just, she didn't want to start CPR, but he was already gone. And that kind of, it was like, if I, maybe I should have persuaded her to.
I think with the, and you said it was an elder person, mm-hmm. with it being an elder person, it's harder for them to even attempt to give CPR or something like that. And a lot of people I know that we have dealt with that's called in, they won't do it. They won't attempt it.
I don't think she, I think in her mind, I know what you're saying, but I think in this lady's mind, she didn't think it was necessary. I think she thought, there's no way that he's gone on me and he'll be okay once they get here kind of attitude.
She's like a denial
yeah.
stage.
Yeah.
Like,
and, yeah. But, you know, some of the things she said kind of, you knew, but so that was sad.
Yeah. Those are definitely hard, especially when you get someone that's in that, you know, denial mode.
Yes.
And, you know, what can you do but keep, just stay there with them and talk to them and be that person that, you know, it's going to take long for the ambulance to get there, you know, in your case, because of
it was,
you know,
the
weather.
And the weather was bad. And even though we did send the volunteer fire department, it still took them a while to get there. And it was, that was sad.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely hard.
But,
and you were talking earlier about a suicide. I had this was when I was at Shelby County, mm-hmm. Had a suicide. The guy had called and he had a shotgun to his mouth, whatever. And this was before I even had any classes, you know, when I was kind of green. And he lived way in the county, and it took officers forever to get there. Well, I kept him on the line talking to him, trying to think of things to ask him. And then if you'd say something, it would trigger or make him mad. You're thinking, oh, gosh, you know, okay, I need to change subject.
Right,
so
yeah.
You're thinking, okay, things that I've heard before, what can I ask? And it was a good long, I went, is the officers ever going to get there? Because you're on the phone 10, 15 minutes because right. he lives in the county. But they got there, thankfully, and he put the gun down. But you know that he has this gun to his head or his
right.
mouth. And it's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've said it, you know, many times on this podcast and, you know, with many different people that, you know, your imagination can be a lot worse than
yes.
being right there and watching it because, you know, he could have had the gun just next to him or something.
Exactly.
Or and you know, in your head you're thinking, well, if he's kind of mumbling what he's saying, that barrel is in his mouth, you know.
Yes.
It's in there. I know it's in there. I can see
yes.
it. I can hear it, you know.
Yes.
So your imagination can just go haywire. So yeah, things
yeah.
can be crazy like that.
We had an attempted suicide, and it was a younger guy out in the county, and he lived out in the country, and he had called his mother first, and she's on her way home and calling us and telling us. And by the time she gets there, he runs out the door with his gun. And we've already got deputies and ambulance to stand by and all that. And he goes out and he starts traveling from house to house out in the country. Mm-hmm. And he goes across cornfields and they're trying to track him. They've got the dogs out there. And then you start getting 911 calls where there's someone out in our shed, and it's like, oh, don't let it happen there. And you don't know, you can't see, you only imagine what's happening.
Right.
And it's in the same area, so you think it's that same person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It was like you go from laughing at singing with each other.
Yeah.
The Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes. Like my third shift team. Yeah.
You're sitting on the edge and at the brink of crying because you just want to help.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever taken any calls from people where they call in saying that something happened, but then the story starts getting distorted a little and it turns
yes.
out it never happened?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're kind of hyped up because it's what they told you, and you tell the officers everything, and then the officers get there and they get told a different story, and they're going, I shouldn't say this, but they think that the dispatcher's lied. It's like, the dispatcher didn't lie. That's what they
right,
told
yeah,
us.
Right, yeah,
know?
We're going by the caller,
yes.
what the caller
we,
said,
we
not
had an
us.
Investigation like that. Got a call that his mother was having a stroke. she had had a strokes before, and we had two seasoned dispatchers on, and they dispatched it, possible stroke, 88-year-old female, she's on the ground, and then they get there, and we had no idea that there were three kids laying out in the yard, and the guy that called, he had like passed out or something too, and it was carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh,
well, they're
geez.
Calling and wanting to know why we didn't dispatch it that way, mm-hmm. and it wasn't told that way at all. We were, you know, the dispatchers were told it was a possible stroke, and
yeah.
no reason to think otherwise.
I have me being in the deputy director's position, I make a lot of recordings,
mm-hmm.
and one of the outer agencies had called in and wanted to do a little investigating on a call. I said, the dispatchers failed to advise us that this kid was stabbed. And, I listened to the phone call, and I always say, tapes do not lie.
Yes.
They cover you. They do not lie.
Right.
and when I listened to it, the lady that called in said that, he grabbed a knife and he cut his hand. That was all she said. Well, apparently this kid was stabbed in his chest and he had to have major surgery.
Oh, wow.
So, we're thinking, okay, the dispatch failed to give this information, which it happens more than once. And it's not the dispatcher's fault. It's like, okay, this is the only information we can go on. We can't give you anything that we don't know. So, but yeah, it was kind of, concerning. Is like, okay, this is really what happened. So I sent him the recording, and we can't give you what we don't have.
Yeah.
We've had two 911 calls at the same time. One of them was, my boyfriend just beat the heck out of me, mm-hmm. and I'm scared he won't leave. And then I'm taking the information, okay, we'll get him out, and starting to dispatch, and my partner gets another 911 call, and it's him. She just beat the heck out of me. Well, what's the address? And I hear her repeat it. And I'm like, that's my girl. We're together. And so, you know, they both have a different story.
Right, yeah.
That is kind of funny because I know mm-hmm. where we work at, there's several different things that, you know, he calls and then she turns around and calls. Yep. So,
well, by the time they got there, he was gone. So he apparently didn't want to pursue his phone call.
That's where good partnerships come in. Whenever your team, whoever you're working with is a good team, and you relay each other, or you're listening to hear what's going on, and you think, oh yeah, that's part of mine. So mm-hmm.
yeah, that's the funny thing is that when you're taking a call, you end up repeating it out loud,
mm-hmm.
and then everybody else hears it, and then they, oh okay, I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Or you know, if you hear the person on radios giving out the information, and the officer asks a question on the radio, and you're hearing it on the phone, you're asking that right away. And
yes.
It's just working and working like
we do that a
good
lot.
Machine.
There's just two of us. So now everybody's different as far as the people that have been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of like to do it all themselves, and that's their call. They'll do it all.
Right.
But some of the haven't been there forever kind of people, they're real good about working together. They'll help tone. They'll answer a question if the officer asks it, if we're on the phone, because we're sitting just real close to each other. So
right.
it's a good teamwork that we know everything about each call.
Like you said, teamwork, that's part of what Nina, we had this a couple of days ago. We gave out awards to dispatchers for teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want. And that's what Nina wants, is anybody that has teamwork, you know, please bring them into Nina, even though we're on this podcast, I'm promoting Nina. But if you have anything like that, let Nina know, because we want to promote
more
dispatchers.
Fun to work when you have a partner that wants to be a team, because I know that if I'm talking and trying to get information or trying to start CPR or find out as much as I can, I know I can hear. She knows the address. I've repeated mm-hmm. it. She knows what she's going on. She can tone them. And that just that 30 seconds is...
You click well together.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, of course, not everybody's like that, but there are a few that I just totally enjoy going to work because I know that we're going to do good.
Yes.
Yeah, that's always the best environment to be in when you're working, especially in 911. Now, going into the wrap up of this episode, you know, you two just listening to you and looking at your faces when you're talking about this, it's obvious that you have a passion for this and you love this job. Now, I've heard that, and I myself fell into this slump at one time, but, you know, I found something new with dispatch and it got me motivated. What would you say or any advice for somebody who's possibly fallen into that type of slump to get them out of that, you know, to make them feel almost like it was, you know, starting over? That's how it was for me when I started doing this podcast. Listening to everybody else's stories, it brought me back to when I first started it and why I loved it to begin with. And, you know, I got this new, like new eyes, you know, and feeling for it again. So is there any advice or anything either one of you that you would have for someone who has fallen into that slump and maybe is looking for something to jumpstart that for them again?
I think it, if you fall in that, it's always to go back to your roots where you first started and who you first worked with, talk to them. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I've learned is if you get a chance to go to any training, go to training because you're going to learn things and make yourself a better dispatcher. I always say every day is a different day and every day you go to work, you're going to learn something different.
Right.
And if you take that outlook that, okay, what am I going to learn today? You know, how am I going to better someone else's life? How am I going to better myself with today? Even though it may be the worst day that you've ever had, it's right. Like, okay, what did I learn today? So
for me, I think it'd be just the opposite. I would want, I went, when I started, there was someone that would has been there for 17, 18 years, and she was very good at what she does, very good. But she was in that slump, and it seemed like she was negative. And I don't know if it was because there were so many new people she had to train and had to work with and that. And for me, it'd be like, it is what you make it. If
that's true.
You
true.
Want it to be a bad day and you come in a bad mood, you're going to put me in a bad mood.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm not going to do good. And that's just going to make it 10 times worse.
If you come in a good mood
and teach me something, then I think she's, I don't know why, but she snapped out of it. And I think part of it is that Terry, our supervisor, has mm-hmm. given her new things to do, different things to do, and is positive about what she can offer.
Right.
Maybe it's not sitting right there on the console all day long having to deal with us new people. Maybe it's showing us something new and teaching us.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I thank you very much, the both of you, for joining me on this episode. It was great, you know, great stories, you know, a lot for people to listen to and to take in. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you for having me.
And for those who are listening, if you have any questions, comments, anything like that, you can email the show, and that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, and that's @901podcast. You can find us on Facebook and like us as well. It's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And in this episode, along with all the other episodes, will be available 24/7 on thejabberlog.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spreaker, and coming soon, SoundCloud. So have a good one, everybody.